So we continue with the 17th chapter here. So probably this will be the last week of our Gita classes. We should be able to complete it this weekend, by this weekend. So we are in the, we are discussing the austerities of the body, mind, body, speech and mind. So we discussed about Brahmacharya, that was a part of the austerities of the body. Now we will discuss about the austerities of the other two parts. Speech and then mind. Anudvega karam vakyam satyam priyahitam chaya swadhyayabhyasanam chaiva vanmayam tapa uchyate. So anudvega karam vakyam. Anudvega means that agitation. Udvega is agitation. Anudvega is non-agitation. Anudvega karam vakyam. So non-agitating speech is very important, Krishna says. That is the austerity of speech. Anudvega karam vakyam satyam priya hitam chayat. Then he described that it should be truthful, then pleasing and beneficial. So there is a significance to the sequence also. Okay. The sequence starts first of all with non-agitating speech. And why does the speech have to be non-agitating? Because it is our speech that determines people's perceptions about us. Either our speech can build bridges or it can build walls. So speech can either build bridges or walls. Now, what does it mean that speech can build bridges? It means that it can bring people together. It can connect people. Now, when can it build walls? When it solidifies preconceptions, stereotypes, misunderstandings. Then these can build walls. So often the whole process of developing a relationship involves both. It is not necessary that all speech has to always break walls and build bridges. No. That means that it is said that good fences, clear fences make good neighbors. Clear fences make good neighbors. That means if the property line is not very clear, then that can itself lead to a lot of conflicts. Now, this is my property, this is my property. So when the fence is clear, okay, this is what is expected, and this is till where you go, and this is till where I go. So, sometimes for us to have proper relationship with people, certain amount of walls are required. That means if some people take us too cheaply or assume a level of familiarity and intimacy that is not actually there, then that can also create problems in the relationship. So in general, when we talk about it, that when can we actually, so if we talk from the spiritual perspective, all of us need guidance. That so that the whole scriptures talk about tach shrunu here, so that we can understand and make choices by which we'll grow spiritually. But generally speaking, we can hear from others only when we trust them. the greatest challenge of a preacher is not just to speak the philosophy in a logically effective and eloquent way. The greatest challenge of the preacher is to somehow convey to the audience that he is their well-wisher. Now, as long as people doubt whether this person, whatever he is speaking, is my well-wisher or not, till that time people can't take what the person is saying seriously. Simple example. So, I'll illustrate this with an example. The greatest challenge of a preacher is to convey to the audience that he is their well-wisher. Or rather, to put that way, to earn the trust of the audience. Just like when we go to a doctor, if we have some doubts, this doctor might be a very exploitative person and that doctor is out to earn a lot of money through me by making me do unnecessary tests and subject me to treatments that are far from solving, they may complicate my issues. Then we are unlikely to apply what the doctor is saying. We may even feel that better let me keep away from this, or we may only do it the whole thing half-heartedly. So that's why actually the doctor, to some extent the patient has to repose faith. At the other extent, the other side, the doctor also has to have some credentials by which the doctor appears trustworthy. And not just he appears trustworthy, but the doctor actually is trustworthy. So both are important. You know, for people, feelings are facts. Feelings are facts. That means that if I feel negatively about someone, then that's the way I feel. Now, over a period of time, maybe by analysis, by introspection, by discussion, I may find out that those negative feelings have no basis. And then I may try to get rid of those negative feelings. But either way, those feelings, as long as they are there, they hold a sway on our judgment. And so, therefore, if somehow the speaker, the teacher, can make people feel that what he wants is good for them, then what he wants is actually their ultimate good, then that opens their minds. Now, how is that to be done? Often, the one aspect of the speaker using the speech as a sword to cut off the material attachments of the attached person, that is the metaphor that we often use in our speaking. And the classic example in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam for this is? Yes, Vidura's attachments being cut off by Dhritarashtra. Or Vidura cutting off the attachments of Dhritarashtra. So, that is an important part. But before those spiritual attachments can actually be cut, there also have to be developed some spiritual attachments by which the person takes those words seriously. Otherwise, we end up alienating the people. And that's why here Krishna is telling Anudvega Karam Vakyam. Now at a superficial level we can say that actually Krishna himself doesn't follow Anudvega Karam Vakyam. Because the first thing that Krishna speaks is 2.11, Ashochyan Ashochastam Pragyavadam Sibhasase. That you are foolish. You're speaking intelligent words, but you are foolish. Yes, he does that. But when does he do that? After Arjuna has expressed trust. కార్పణ్య దోషోపహిత స్వభావ. సో దిస్ కమ్స్ ఇన్ 2.11 అశోచ్యానం నుంచి వచ్చేస్తాం. బట్ 2.7 ఇస్ ఐ సరెండర్, ఐ అక్సెప్ట్ యూ యాజ్ మై టీచర్. సో దాట్ ఎక్స్ప్రెషన్ ఆఫ్ that expression of faith is important, and Krishna may use cutting statements. So, but they are followed up, they are preceded and succeeded by things which clarify, contextualize. So 2.411, agitating statement is preceded by 2.7 is statement of faith. Yeah, let me complete. I'm not so now when we talk about agitating or yeah, give me again. Okay, are 2.2 and 2.3 not agitating? We could say, in a sense, 2.23, kutastva kashmalavidam vishame samupasthitam. Where has such weakness come upon you? Shudra mrudaya daurbalyam. You are acting like a shudra. So yes, we could call them as agitating statements, but they are more like pep talks. It's like, when we are talking about agitating statements, we are not just talking about statements that are just meant to serve as encouragements through chastisements. We are talking about statements which transform a person's worldview. Sometimes somebody might become very discouraged and you may say, "Arey, tujhse aisi umeed nahi thi. You know, we didn't expect such a thing from you. You are a brave person." So now, you remember in the beginning only I talked about how philosophical education has two parts, encouragement and enlightenment. So both have to blend together. If there is only encouragement without enlightenment, then it just becomes a mundane self-help pep talk. And if there is only enlightenment without encouragement, then it also becomes alienating. This sounds very lofty, I can't practice it. It sounds good, but I can't practice it. So there has to be a blend of encouragement and enlightenment. So if you look at 2.2 and 2.3, there is no enlightenment over there. Krishna is not telling him you are not the body or the soul. He says, hey, whatever he knows, you are Arya, you are a Kshatriya, don't act like a Shudra, don't give into Hrudaya Daurbalyam. So it is basically at the level of just motivational, inspirational talk that happens at a material level. Clear? Yeah. So now it is only in 2.11 onward that Krishna starts giving enlightenment. He says that you are whole. It's not that you are just temporarily discouraged. You are having a much more deep-rooted misconception that needs to be addressed. And in a sense, 2.2 and 2.3 are just addressing Arjuna's feelings. You're feeling discouraged? Don't feel discouraged like this. However, 2.11 is talking about his conceptions. You know, feelings are more mental, conceptions are intellectual. He's saying you're speaking wise words, but you're actually foolish. So it's going deeper in that sense. So now, there are times when udvegakaram vakyam is also required. But more often than not, we don't need any austerity to do udvegakaram vakyam, isn't it? Most people, they can shout at others relatively easily. So often the austerity is not shout at others. Some people might be because they have faced some childhood trauma, or if they had been under some overbearing guardians, they don't never speak out against others. Now for them to speak out might be an austerity. But if you see comparatively speaking, the number of people who have a excessively moving tongue rather than a less moving tongue are far greater. So That's why the focus here is an anudvegakaram vakyam. So it's not a, see, there is a, Krishna is saying this is a austerity. Austerity doesn't mean that that particular thing is banned. But that is something which we should do. So brahmacharya doesn't mean sex is banned. Even grihasthas are expected to be brahmacharya. But that needs to be regulated. So anudvegakaram vakyam means that the speech should, at non-agitating speech is something which we should be able to do even when our impulses push us to speak in agitating ways. And it's significant that in the sequence, Krishna characterizes anudvegakaram vakyam as the first characteristic. So it's even before satyam. Generally speaking, we should speak the truth. And the highest truth is that which connects us with the absolute truth. But Krishna considers anudvegakaram vakyam as the first. Anudvegakaram vakyam satyam priya hitam chayat. So, truthful, pleasing and beneficial. These are the four characteristics. So, a Chanakya Pandit says that if a person knows how to speak well, such a person can conquer the whole world. Such a person can conquer the whole world. It is not just physical power that enables a person to conquer. Ultimately, physical power of an individual is of limited use. That physical power may be important, but if a person has to do anything influential, the person needs to have a team working with. And the team will work for a person only when that person is able to motivate, is able to inspire. And that's why the austerity of speech is extremely important. And he says, interestingly, Swadhyaya Abhyasanam Chaiva. Swadhyaya Abhyasanam Chaiva is a recitation of the Vedic scriptures. So this is an austerity in the sense that this disciplines and purifies us. So regular recitation of the scriptures is something which forces us to think about the scriptures. It spiritualizes our tongue and our intelligence that way. And in the traditional Vedic context, there would be, in the mornings, there would be, in the Pathshalas, they would recite the Vedic hymns. And generally in ISKCON, from 1965 onwards, Srila Prabhupada, when he got on the point, started the classes. First there were three classes in the evening, and then he started classes in the morning. And then he continued that, but the morning classes were quite frivolous initially. But after he started the shloka recitation in the Bhagavatam class, things became a little serious. Because if there is no recitation to do, you sit and passively hear. So actually, you know, if somebody is hearing a class, while hearing a class, I decide I want to go out for a few minutes. Just do some sightseeing and come back. Just go for a walk. It will look very odd. And you would hesitate to do that. But our mind is invisible. And our mind regularly goes for walks. It goes on sightseeing tours to think about anything and everything. And often, when we are not actively interested or involved in the particular activity, then this sort of distraction of the mind happens more and more. So, one of the ways in which we force ourselves to get involved is by recitation. So, when Srila Prabhupada started this shloka recitation, actually Srila Prabhupada also standardized things afterwards. Initially, they would have one shloka and then they would recite the shloka several times. And he would actually, initially there would be 10-15 devotees in the class. So Prabhupada would himself recite the shloka 4-5 times. Then he would ask everyone to recite the shloka. And everyone had to get the pronunciation right. And if they didn't get the pronunciation right, Prabhupada would tell, okay, you practice it. He would make them hear it. And he says, tomorrow you have to get it right. And then all the devotees would be struggling to get the pronunciation right. And it was a challenge for them at that time that forced them to take the whole morning education seriously. So, Swadhyaya Abhyasanam Chaiva. In our life also, studying, reciting of scriptures, reciting especially important verses which we connect with. They may be prayers or they may be verses which are more of containing wisdom. But that can be a very solacing activity. Sometimes we feel that memorizing anything is an unnecessary burden. However, verse memorization, 8, doesn't burden the head, rather it unburdens the heart. Unburdens the heart means that when we are stressed, when we are depressed, when we are facing some emotional upheaval that is burdening us, at that time reciting of verses can become a pleasing and solacing way to connect with Krishna. And then as Krishna's presence manifests in our heart, then that calms us down. That calms us down. And we see this in the third chapter of the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Gajendra calls out to the Lord. The Gajendra's crisis, the second chapter, third chapter is Gajendra's prayers of surrender. And fourth chapter is Gajendra attains the spiritual world. So 8.3 talks about this. And there Srila Prabhupada mentions that the devotees of the Krishna consciousness movement should regularly recite verses. He says, of course they should recite the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. But then he says, this also says they should recite verses from the Brahma Samhita and Narasimha prayers, like Ito Narasimha Parato Narasimha. And there is a verse, Jajapa Paramam Japyam. So there is a verse, Prak Janma Anukshishta. He said that what he has up, which he had learned in the previous life, that stayed on with him in this life. Now in our situation, things may not be so dramatic. You know, what we have memorized in this life itself, we don't remember. What to speak of remembering something from a previous life? And the response may not be as dramatic. Krishna may not himself come on Garuda. But the scriptures, what they give, the specific examples may not apply literally to our situations, but the principles always apply. So when we try to memorize verses, often if we read the Sanskrit of some verses, we'll find that even it's one line may inspire us. Sometimes we may see long verses and may find that it's very difficult to memorize. But we don't necessarily have to memorize full verses also. We think that the purpose of memorizing verses is so that I can quote it in classes. Or when I can quote it to others. That's good. And Prabhupada talked about how devotees should be able to quote verses as a lawyer quotes the law courts. That we'll be able to convince others. But that's only one aspect of it. Another far more important aspect is actually for giving us a ready-made template for remembering Krishna. What do verses offer us? Verses offer us a ready-made template for remembering Krishna. Because when we are told that we should always remember Krishna, how do we remember him? And some of us may be able to close our eyes and think of the beautiful darshan of Radha Gopinath and try to meditate on that. We may chant Hare Krishna. Chanting Hare Krishna is a very powerful way to remember Krishna. But the challenge is, because we chant regularly, our chanting often becomes mechanical. And we are not able to put our heart into it. So, although chanting is a very easy and effective way to remember Krishna, sometimes when the mind is disturbed, we may not be able to connect with chanting. The chanting requires that we have some level of desire to remember Krishna. And because chanting is so, we do it so frequently, sometimes we may not be able to just get that desire only. So if we have some other way by which we can connect with Krishna, then we recite a verse a few times, our mind becomes calm, and then we can chant also. So the point here is that we will ourselves find in our classes, in our studies, that okay, there are certain lines which inspire me very much, certain Vaishnava songs, certain verses, and reciting that can become a very powerful devotional ritual in our lives. There are certain devotional rituals which are standard or standardized, we do every morning in our morning program. But apart from that, we can also have our own rituals that calm us. that steady us in our day-to-day life. So, verse recitation can be one of them. Now, anudvega karam vakyam. Any questions about this? Yeah? Yes. Sometimes it may seem that speaking truthfully and speaking pleasingly may be contradictory. Yeah. It is definitely something that we feel more often than when it is necessary. But it is necessary on so many occasions. But in general, speaking truthfully should not become a justification for fault finding. Mm-hmm. We discussed earlier that a characteristic of the divine nature is apaishuna. Apaishuna means aversion to fault finding. That means that it certainly, if we are to help others, sometimes we may have to find some faults. But if we have just a fault finding attitude, looking for faults, then even when we sometimes have something valuable to say, people will not be able to benefit from that. So normally, you know, we know the story of the boy who would say wolf, wolf, wolf. And when there would be no wolf, actually, he would say that, and people got so fed up with him that when actually there was a wolf, people would not listen to him. So that is true with respect to falsity, but that is also true with respect to fault finding. Sometimes we may find so many faults, and if people feel that those faults don't exist, those faults are not important, they just stop taking it seriously. And then when there is something important also, then people don't take it seriously. So in general, it's best to speak in ways that help others in Krishna consciousness while also keeping them encouraged. So while most important is, because Krishna consciousness ultimately is a voluntary activity. If people are not encouraged and inspired to practice Krishna consciousness, then even if we speak the best truth to them, if that discourages them, that alienates them, then they will not practice Krishna consciousness even if they understand the truth. So truth has to be presented in an encouraging way. The end result of our education should always be encouragement. Now, in the name of encouragement, I think I'll just go into this a little bit. Looking at it another way, there are three kinds of authorities or parents. So there are permissive, authoritative, and authoritarian parents. So essentially, parenting has these two parts. We have to give. This is a whole seminar. I won't go into this right now, but let's. Okay. So, authoritative parents. What's happening here? Okay. Yeah, these are the four kinds of parents: neglectful, permissive, authoritarian, and authoritative. So neglectful parents basically live in their old world. Yes, live in their old world. Actually, they don't care much for their parents. They don't care much for their wards at all. So actually, parenting, there are two things to be offered. There is love and there is discipline. So the neglectful parents offer neither love nor discipline. Then if we see the permissive parents offer only love, no discipline. So they never set any limits. They do not give any discipline. They offer only love. They just try to keep their children happy without taking care whether the children are growing or not. So whatever the children say, ask for, the parents try to provide it, all that. It's permissive. So there is love but no discipline. There are no limits which are set. Then on the other hand, there are authoritarian parents. There are only limitations, no love. Only disciplining but no love. And lastly, there are authoritative parents who they offer love, and when there is discipline, they do discipline also, but they explain things in a way that why are these limits necessary? Why are these limits necessary? By which the parents, children can learn and children can grow. Let me summarize it here. No love, no limits. Permissive parents is what? Only love, no limits. Actually, it is not even love actually. I think it is love. But from this point of view, authoritarian parents, only limits, no love. And authoritative parents, so in this way, actually, it is not that a particular person is always authoritative or authoritarian or liberal or permissive. Or people are individuals and they may oscillate. But some parents go towards permissive. Parents go to authoritarian. But in general, those who are good parents, they try to arrive at this balance of authoritative. And that requires it's an ongoing relationship. It's not something which we can standardize as a policy all the time. You know, policy also requires intelligence to implement. But that's the idea. There are sometimes when we can speak the truth so that the person gets cleared of some misconceptions that are there. There are other times when the person needs to just be encouraged. And at that time, the truth may not be what is required. So we don't have to speak lies. But it's not that every time we have to speak the full truth about everyone. We can speak whatever is required for that person to be able to grow. It's like now when we, as editors, when people send us articles, prospective authors, now we have to have a certain standard for the articles to be published in Back to Godhead. And if the article is not up to that standard, we can't publish it. But we don't say just that, we can't compromise that standard just so that the articles get published. But at the same time, we just don't say that, okay, this article can't be accepted. Then generally speaking, we tell, okay, these are the good points about the article, the author, and these are points which need to be improved. And when there is a balance of both, then the author feels encouraged. And then the author can keep writing. If there is only a critical attitude given, then the authors become discouraged. So it is, there was some survey done in University of Wisconsin. I think I mentioned this in the Ishopanishad. Now there were two clubs of writers. So there was a boys club and there was a girls club. So the boys decided, all of us, we want to become good writers. So whatever we write, we'll show it to each other and we'll see what are the faults in it. And we'll tell each other the faults so that they can be improved. So the girls, they had this feminist attitude. They say, whatever the boys do, we'll do the opposite of that. So whatever we will also write, and whatever we write, we will tell what is the good in all that we have written. And then the survey did us, they followed up these people after some 10 to 15 years, and they found among the boys practically nobody had become a professional writer. And and even those who would write for whatever purposes, for practical purposes, they were not known to be very good writers. On the other hand, among the girls, quite a few of them had become professional writers, some of them very famous, and most of them were known as above average writers wherever field they were in. So here we see, now why this example of writing is there? Because many people think of writing as a somewhat non-obligatory and a highbrow activity. Non-obligatory means people, you don't have to write. And highbrow means, I think it's a little literary activity, a little intellectual activity. So it, so in a sense, Krishna consciousness is also like that. People feel it's not obligatory, isn't it? It's not obligatory, and they also feel, okay, this is a little, all this is a little high standards. So if people are constantly discouraged, then how can they practice? How can they be encouraged? How can they be inspired? Is it clear? So, Manaprasada Saumyatvam, Maunamatma Vinigraha, Bhavasamshuddhirityetat, Tapomanasamuchyate. So, Manaprasada, satisfaction. Saumyatvam is Prabhupada's. That's no duplicity, no inner malevolent intention towards other. Mauna Atma Vinigra. It's interesting that Mauna is not the austerity of speech, it is the austerity of the mind. Normally we think of Mauna as not speaking. But often when our mind is not speaking, when our tongue is not speaking, our mind is speaking quite verbosely. Quite vigorously, and often it's quite malevolently also. Mind is on a, so the mind sometimes actually goes on a riot. You know, it just demolishes. This person is bad, that person is bad, this person is bad, this one. You know, the whole idea of a riot is what? You know, whatever you see, you destroy it. So sometimes the mind goes on a riot. You know, this person causes this problem, this situation causes this problem, this problem. So actually the mind can be quite hyperactive. So that's why Maunam is not so much about the speech as it is about the mind. The mind has to become calm. And Atma Vinigraha, self-regulation, Bhava Samshuddhi. So it's interesting, again, purification of existence, Krishna is putting as a characteristic of the mind. That means Krishna is here talking about cultivating purity of thoughts. That with the mind, the impure thoughts will come. But the impure thoughts need not stay. They'll come, but we try to remove them. Bhava Samshuddhiritiyeta. There's a letter of Srila Prabhupada where some devotee asks him that, I'm troubled by sex desire. Prabhupada said to get sex desire is no problem. It's not a big problem, but to act on sex desire, that is a big problem. So when the thought comes, if you don't let that thought grow, then it will go away. On the other hand, if you let it grow, then it will contaminate us, not only mentally, but also physically. So all these are tapomanasam. And again, if you look at the order, the first austerity of the mind, Krishna is telling us, manaprasada, is satisfaction. Why? Because all the other vices can trouble us when we become dissatisfied. If we are satisfied, actually no other vice can trouble us. If I am satisfied, then lust can't trouble me, envy can't trouble me, greed can't trouble me. And satisfaction is a matter of choice. Satisfaction is a matter of choice. How is satisfaction a matter of choice? It depends on the focus of our thoughts. If I think of what I don't have, I can never be satisfied. But if I think of the things that I have, then I can become satisfied. So when Krishna is telling, let satisfaction, manaprasada, satisfaction be the austerity of the mind, that means we focus on thinking of those things which will make us satisfied. So in talking about satisfaction, it is not just a feeling that comes and goes automatically, arbitrarily rather. Sometimes I feel satisfied, sometimes I don't feel satisfied. It is also a choice that we can make consciously. Certainly, there are certain situations which are dissatisfying, which are troubling, and we may need to correct those situations. But when we only harp on those things, then we make ourselves dissatisfied. But when we choose to dwell on the things which are right in our life, then that can enable us to become satisfied. So, in that sense, just as, say, lust is a feeling, but lust is also a choice, in the sense that when the feeling comes, I dwell on it, then it grows and grows and grows further. So just as the negative side is a choice, it's a feeling as well as a choice, similarly self-satisfaction is also a feeling as well as a choice, and it is the first among the austerities because it in a sense insulates us from all other troubles of the mind. The Bhagavatam says that when a person is going along a thorny road, if the person has good footwear, then the person will not be troubled. Similarly, if a person wears the wear of satisfaction, then that person will not be troubled by anything in this world. Shraddhaya paraya taptam paraya tapastatrividam narai Afalakankshibhir yuktai Sattvikam parichakshate. So, with transcendental faith, paraya taptam, when one performs these austerities, tapastatrividam narai, these three kinds of austerity one performs, and afalakankshibhir yuktai, without attachment to the fruits, then that austerity is called as austerity in the mode of goodness. So now it's interesting, if the faith is transcendental, why is the austerity in goodness? Isn't it? If the faith is transcendental, the austerity should also be transcendental. But actually, the faith is that there is a transcendental reality, that the scriptures are transcendental and they teach transcendental principles. That faith is transcendental. But one's goal may not be transcendental. Ultimately, what determines our motives, what determines our mode, what determines our situation, is our motivations. So I may have faith that, okay, Krishna and pure love for Krishna are the ultimate goal of life. I may have that as the highest reality, but that may not be my functioning goal right now. So, shraddhaya paraya there's a faith that is transcendental, but right now the person is functioning on the mode of goodness. Afalakankshibhiryuktai. That is how that person is functioning. So, when will that austerity actually become transcendental? When it is not just afalakankshibhir, it is actually Krishna arpita. When it will be offered to Krishna, then it will become fully transcendental. When it is just done with detachment, at that time, it is in the mode of goodness. So, many times people may believe that God is good and the kingdom of God is good, but I want to enjoy in this world. So, that is also one level of faith in God. It's definitely not the highest level, but it's not atheism. So, here the faith is there, the scriptures are good, and I have to follow the scriptures, but the goal is not directly the spiritual world. The goal is detached functioning in this world so that one can get some better results in future. Sattvikam parichakshate. Satkarmana pujartham. Satkarmana pujartham. Tapodambhena chaivayat. Tapodambhena chaivayat. क्रियते तदिह प्रोक्तम् क्रियते तदिह प्रोक्तम् राजसं चलमध्रुवम्. So when it is motivated, the sacrifice is motivated by this worldly gain, for satkaramana pujartham, for that kind of results, then rajasam chalamadhruvam, it is rajasic and it is Krishna. It is the same word that I used for chanchalam himana Krishna pramati balavadhruvam. Chalam and adhruvam. Adhruvam is temporary, chalam is flickering. That means when a person is motivated by honor in this world, when a particular activity gives honor, that person will do it. When it stops giving honor, the person will stop doing it. That's how it varies. Satkaramana pujartham. Now, many times when people give charity, for example, they may give charity for religious causes also. So, they may do it not because so much they want to glorify Krishna, but because they want themselves to be known as patrons of religion. It's good that they're giving the charity to Krishna, and yena kena prakara mana Krishna nivesha, that principle is always there. But yena kena prakarena is not the highest level of devotional service. So it's gradual evolution. So what Krishna is telling over here, these apply to all the three kinds of austerity, these principles with body, mind and speech. Mudra grahena atmano yat.
Mudra grahena atmano yat.
Pidaya kriyate tapaha,
pidaya kriyate tapaha,
parasya utsadanartham va, parasya utsadanartham va,
tattama samudarutam.
So parasya utsadanartham va, utsana means trouble others, for the causing of annihilation of, destroying others. Moodha grahena atmanoya. Moodha grahena means it's foolishly done. Atma pidaya. So it's interesting, Krishna has not talked about tormenting oneself as a part of austerity in the earlier two situations. Here he says tamasic austerity is what torments a person. Pidaya kriyate Arjuna. Pidaya kriyate tapaha. So the whole idea is that by tormenting oneself at the physical level, one can gain some higher power. The focus is not so much on gaining the higher reality, but on tormenting oneself at this level so that one can become more powerful at this level afterwards. You know, Hiranyakashipu, you know, he was not really thinking that I want to transport myself to Brahmaloka. I was doing tapasya. Vrikasur was not really interested in transporting himself to Kailash directly, and not in terms of, he might wanted to enjoy Uma. But his goal was not to ascend to that higher level of consciousness. So his focus was on this level of consciousness only, and he wanted to drag people down, get power at that level, and for that he was ready to tolerate trouble at this level. That was the kind of austerity that he was doing. Then he will talk about charity. Datavyamitiya danam, datavyamitiya danam. Diyate anupakarine, diyate anupakarine. Deshe kale cha patre cha, deshe kale cha patre cha. Taddanam satvikam smritam, taddanam satvikam smritam. So datavyam, this is to be given. And diyate anupakarine, one doesn't think that one is doing upkara to others. Deshe kale cha patre cha, and I call time, place, circumstances. That is sattvikam smritam. Then yattu pratyupkarartham phalamuddishya va punaha diyate cha pariklishtam taddanam rajasam smritam yattu pratyupkarartham, with the desire of a pratyupkar, that I will get this in return, and with that fellow, or I have to give this, you know, klishtam, pariklishtam. One doesn't feel like giving it, one doesn't want to give it, but one, because of some obligation, some pressure, one just gives it. So resentfully giving it. Dhanam rajasam smritam. So actually speaking, charity, austerity seem to be very good religious activities, but even they can happen in lower moods. Adesha kale yaddanam apatrebhyascha diyate asatkritam avagnyatam,
asatkritam avagnyatam,
tattamasamudarutam,
tattamasamudarutam.
Adeshakale, so there is no, it's the opposite of, there's no deshakala patra which you've seen over there, and asatkritam avagnyatam. So there's one there's a drunkard in a beer, in a beer bar, and he comes out and he sees there is a beggar, and he offers him a little bit of the tubi ke yaad rakhega pile. So this is charity in the mode of ignorance. So adesha kale yadanu. So the time, place, circumstance is not proper, the object is not proper, the what is given in charity is not proper, nothing is proper. So charity in and of itself, Krishna gives a very profound vision by which he sees that actually it is even activity that we consider normally to be laudable may be deplorable if they are done improperly. And so in this way he has talked about austerity, he has talked about charity, before that he has talked about yajna. So after this, he will, in the next section we'll discuss in the evening, he'll talk about Om Tat Sat. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki Shila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanande.